Hello, and welcome to 10 Very Big Books, a Malazan read-through podcast. My name is Peter Bond, and I've read each book in the main series. However, my two co-hosts are reading the series for the first time. With me today is my friend and closest confidant, India Jones.
Good day, sir.
And the third leg of this is Josh Baker's here too.
Yeah, it's your boy.
Today we're done Deadhouse Gates, but we're doing a wrap up and a mailbag show. So we're gonna talk about the book in total and our general thoughts. But first, we asked everyone to write in with opinions about Deadhouse Gates, and we're going to try and respond to it as much as we can. We picked out some emails and tweets. Sometimes we're just responding to single lines. Sometimes we respond to the whole thing. We really appreciate everyone that wrote in. But before we get into talking about it, having some discussions, I first wanted to ask a question to my two co-hosts. Mm. You know, obviously, we know we're going to return to Seven Cities, you know, Tavor has arrived, kind of setting up this conflict, you know. But I would love to know, since throughout Deadhouse Gates, we see this rebellion arise as Seven City locals are trying to push out Imperial occupation of their continent, you know. So what do we think about this conflict? You know what I mean, like, I know we, like, have personal stakes in the characters, but, like, how do you feel about the Malazan Empire being here? Do you have a particular opinion about either side of this war that is growing?
Hmm. Well, I mean, I really feel like the rebellion is kind of, in some ways, like, I understand why they're rebelling, that they feel like they have this oppressive force, but I mean, I feel like we didn't meet too many people in this book whose lives were exponentially worse since the Malazans arrived, you know? Like, in a lot of ways, they bring, like, order and stability to a lot of the regions they come to. And, like, for a lot of the nomadic people, they just kind of let them be. And they're like, hey, you do you.
Well, not all the nomadic people.
Well, yeah, sometimes they beat them into submission and they make them into the greatest high fist we'll ever meet. But, like, I don't know. Like, I've been kind of confused why this whole thing happened. And listen, regardless of whether it's right that it did or did not happen, the rebellion people really committed some horrific atrocities.
Yeah, well, there's certainly...
You know, excuse me.
Okay.
I'm not down with the colonialism, A. B,
I don't know
we're generalizing the rebellion people when I bet a bunch of them didn't even want to be there. Meanwhile, our girl, Lassine, is arguably the most vile person in this whole situation.
She's just a nice old woman.
Of her little, oh, I'm doing this because of this. It's all one moving part that I'm just a small piece of. I think the fuck not.
I do agree that, like, Lassine, I do think she is, it's a real cop-out to be like, this isn't my choice, I'm just perpetuating the system.
I'm just like, here, man.
If anything, that's maybe the worst part. That's the worst point of view you could take in regards to immoral systems of the world. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Josh, do you not feel like I'm 100% in John, like, it being colonialistic? I don't know how you could say it's not.
I mean, well, I feel like it's more like the Roman Empire, which I guess is still colonialism now that I think about it.
Yeah, definitely.
So maybe I'll just shut up. Maybe I'll just be quiet over
Can
here.
Can we just, like, live and let live in this kind of situation? Like, Malazan, you have enough, right? You're thriving.
Yeah, she's not wrong.
Why do we need to, you know, we don't need to go for other places. We could just let everyone be fine. And then the rebellion would have never started, you know?
True.
Well, listen, there is a murky element to it, but mine, anyway, tweet at us about it if you want. Yeah. Well, Josh, hit us with our first, that was just a little peek question. I want to get in on it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Get our lips wet.
Yeah, let's dive in this pool. Josh, take us into it.
All right. This comes from Neil, or Niall. Hey gang, I've been meaning to reach out for a while to say I love the show. All three of you seem super sweet and your dynamic is hilarious. As a longtime fan of the series, I'm beyond thrilled it's getting this kind of attention. Quick question for all of you. Who is your favorite character so far? P.S. I am shocked no one made a panic at the disco joke last episode, especially what with their god being called Cotillion/Dancer.
Solid bet, gotta say.
Yeah. That was a good one.
Yeah.
Who was Panic?
Are you kidding me?
Oh, the boy, the small boy, the small boy.
Hmm. Favorite character. Someone else go first. I don't know. I have to think.
No, Josh.
I think my favorite, I'm definitely not talking long to stall.
All right, I'm going.
Thank you.
My favorite character has to be Felicent. I'm just saying it. Oh my God. It's like, I know that's not how some people feel, but she is just the character I'm most interested in reading about. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, her storyline is what I was most compelled by. Her emotional journey, I was invested in, you know? And I think she, you know, it's not to say I endorse all of her choices, although I have defended them a fair amount on this show. But, you know, when I think about this book, I'm drawn to her, and I think her story is great. Inge, what do you think? Favorite character?
You know what? I totally agree with her storyline being the best one, most interesting, and the only one that I really enjoyed mostly throughout the story. But I'm going to have to say, because she is so painful, Haboric.
You're turned into a Haboric fan.
Yeah.
Wow.
He is wise. That's a little twist to the end.
He is, you know, he also had a journey.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm with it.
Josh?
I think I'm going to say my favorite character is Fiddler.
Interesting. Why'd you pick him, Fiddler?
Well, I just think of all the characters, he's the only, like, he's the one that the dude just gets shit thrown at him all day, every day. And do you know what he responds by? He just stays him. He, like, just never changes. He's like, I'm Fiddler. He's, like, in the face of, you know, he's face to face with gods. And he's like, good boy. I'm just a sapper. Don't know what to tell you.
Just a soldier out
just
here.
Just a soldier. Just a Malazan sapper. And I just love him. He's just, yeah. The dude doesn't change.
No. I do want to shout out. I really appreciated the Mapanocarium storyline again.
Mm-hmm.
Because I felt like I got a lot more out of it this time around.
And you know, it's a really good story because it really follows that traditional storytelling thing where the characters end up exactly the same as where they started and nothing changes about them. I love that. You know, they definitely just start right back with him having amnesia and Mappo being like, yep, all good here. Definitely nothing we should really talk about.
We actually have an email I want to return to this subject on.
Oh, okay.
Let's do it a little later on. I think it's a great email. Inge, do you want to read our next tweet?
This is a tweet from Scott. DG is great. The gang flying through Warrens on the Salando is one of my favorite parts on reread. It sets up more later. Kalam's ending was a bit of a letdown, though, with Lassine. I agree, Scott. True words. I was hoping for a bit more of a fight, I guess.
I like the swerve. We've talked about it a bit. But I would like to know, looking back on, if you guys have any further context or clues about the Salanda, what's going on with that boat, that whole kind of interlude in the early part of Deadhouse Gates.
All I have is that I think someone at some point on Twitter was like, man, it's great when we see this Erickson told us that we're going to see that whole shebang from the other side's perspective. And like how that happens, I don't even fucking know, man. Like, I'm excited, but I'm like very curious how he gets us to that exact scene from another perspective. It'll be cool.
Nice plug that to bring it up that we talked to Steven Erickson. That's kind of nice.
Yeah. You know, that's what I'm here for.
This comment comes from the Malazan subreddit from the Riddler 78. The Chain of Dogs is the single greatest story arc in the series and is a mirror of the events of the greater story just in a tighter format. It's where the point Erickson tries to make with the series becomes apparent, especially on a reread. For me, Gardens of the Moon was a messy promise of greatness. Deadhouse Gates delivered on that promise.
Quick question.
Sure.
So, the Chain of Dogs, I just thought that was the people. So how, like, what is, like,
it
what
is,
do you mean
kinda,
by that? What does that mean?
Within the conversation around the books, it usually refers to, like, the whole Diker Coltane storyline and, like, their book-long trek to Eren, you know?
That's pretty factual. Granted, even though it was insufferable for the first, like, three quarters of the book, I really liked the way it ended.
Yeah, I know we got some books to get through. I'd be really curious to hear how that strikes you on a reread, you know? Like, how that feels. Because to me, it's a very interesting thing reading that through a second time, kind of knowing where that story is going.
Well, yeah, I'll say.
But this
tears
question
in my eyes.
This question makes me think, and I wanted to ask you this. He talks about Gardens of the Moon and Deadhouse Gates, and they're both two pretty different books, you know, especially since, for me, I was really getting my bearings in the first book and then kind of found my footing, so to speak, in the second book. And Josh, I'd love to hear what you think about comparing the two books and with the differences in reading them.
Well, I would say similar to what you were just going on, I felt like this book is like a really, it's like a really tight story, you know what I mean? But and like a story that does a lot of things differently than many other fantasy books, versus the first one is, it's definitely like a, hey, here is this world, here is a story within this world. It didn't really feel as strong to me in terms of like the narrative overall. The world is wonderful and how it like functions and the characters playing within it. I felt like the A to B and how we get there in Deadhouse Gates is just way better.
I agree with that. I think there's cleaner arcs in Deadhouse Gates. And if anything, it's like Gardens of the Moon, like maybe it's like too much to chew on sometimes,
yes,
you know, like there's a lot in that book, mm-hmm. you know, what do you think about comparing the two books, Inge?
Yeah, I agree. I think that it was definitely though, the first book was such a learning curve that even when I was reading the story, I was just like, I have nothing to hold on to here. Like there's nothing for me to grasp and be like, okay, mm-hmm. I get that. Whereas in the second book, in my opinion, actually, I feel like the storylines were even more separate. I don't know if you guys agree with that.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Oh, definitely. Like, I mean, like, okay, you can think, like, there's whole characters who, like, because in the first book, it's like, there's Malazance and there's Darujistan, like, Daruz, and, like, it's just that. But, like, how does Mappa Nikarim relate to Felicin? I mean, it's like...
Right.
Yeah, in the first one, I think almost every plot line meets, with the exception of Tattersail, because she, you know, explodes. But, like, this one, yeah, there's whole groups that are in... integral to the whole story that just don't ever see each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Which is like interesting. Mm-hmm. But also, I don't know. It just made for a better story for me because you're getting more out of it and you're understanding different points of views. And then at the end, you're right. There is more of like an okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, moment.
If anything,
whereas in the first book, I said it a lot, but I don't really know if I ever knew why I was saying. Oh.
If anything, I almost feel like it's telling the story of a continent and a place. At like a time, if that makes any sense. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I totally get that.
Like some people talk about the series as like telling a history in a way. And like, I don't know. I always feel like this book has such an evocative setting. And I think that maybe contributes to it, that it's kind of just crossing seven cities at this time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot more sense.
I agree.
This email is from Emil. I've really been enjoying your read through of the series so far, especially with all the different points of view the three of you have. One of the things that really struck me was that you were far more generous to Felicin than I was when reading. I would disagree that I was at all merciful.
I agree.
I loathed. Emil says I loathed her character. My question is about how strongly Josh and India felt that Mappo should have left Ikarim to be taken by the Azath. Assuming this isn't a spoiler, What do the two of you think that being taken by the Azath looks like? Would you change your mind if you knew that meant he would either die if he was lucky or be buried alive for eternity? Also, shout out to Daniel who asked a similar Azath question. Absolutely love Josh's hot take on the refugee situation, by the way. Hey, that makes one person in the entire world. Thanks, Emil.
So get into it. Like, I don't know. What do you think? I wish you would be more repentant about the Azath thing.
No, what I meant was he should have been left in the house like his dad was. That's what we're saying. We understand that the vines mean an eternity of just being there alive and not doing anything. And that sounds awful. We don't want that.
That sounds like a good time to me.
But like, let's say if it's going to kill him, is that all right?
Yeah, that's fine.
What the?
Do we understand how long this man has lived?
Eons.
He can't die. We all die.
Well, the jackets are, he's actually only a half jacket, right?
Yeah, but he's old, I think, you know.
Yeah, he's been around for a hot minute.
So he can't die? Like, no, I'm fine if he dies too. So he's a good guy, but like, come on.
So you're good. You're good if he dies, is what you're saying.
If it's that, or complete this like perpetual cycle of like fall into rage, kill lots of people, wake up with amnesia, continue on. But that sounds shitty too. So,
I mean, exactly. It's like, what kind of life are we living here? What kind of life is that?
I mean, listen. I'm pro Ikarim, but I do know what you mean. Like, I forgot I murdered the city. Isn't a good excuse morally.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just like can't get on board is too sad of a boy, you know.
Well, he is a sad boy, but, you know, sometimes that's what you get.
Exactly. The cards life deals to us, you know?
Well, he didn't get dealt. I guess it may. Anyway. And read the next. Wait, let's go.
Alrighty then. Okay, this is another tweet from Sean. Not another one from Sean, but another tweet from someone named Sean.
You sound like me.
What characters defied your expectations, surprised you, or let you down? It's a lit question. But I don't want to go first. I have to think about this.
Defied expectations.
I guess Felicin defied expectations.
What
I did
expectations?
Not see her doing that. I don't know, of not being such
Oh, I know who. I got it. I think Bowden defied my expectations.
Interesting.
Yeah. Because of all the characters in this book, I would say he's the one whose motivations I just don't know. I just got to know. He just did things. And I was like, what? Like, I know he was a Talon and I guess was sent to protect Felicin. But boy, howdy, did he do it in a bad way. And then he made it clear he didn't care about her. And then he leaves her. And then he comes back and burns himself to death to save her. I have so many questions about all of his motivations.
That's pretty factual. Yeah.
Yeah.
But did he defy your expectations? He defied them?
He refused to let me have expectations because he just kept doing shit. And I was like, what are we doing, Bowden? Who are you?
Yeah. I feel
because
that.
He must have been pretty smart because he had all that fucking expository information about the Solanda when they're on the boat. Mm-hmm. And he's just rattling off like these crazy facts that like, why would you know all that? And then he's like, he makes tactical decisions the whole time they're in the slave camp to try and, you know, make their lives easier. But then he does just die horrifically in a very like matter of fact way just by.
Well, Josh, he was immune to fire. His skin was a little bronze.
Yeah, why
know?
Did he think he was immune to fire?
Classic.
He had a good base going, you know?
Yeah, I just have a lot of questions about my boy, Bowden.
I really thought about it. I don't know if I have a good answer. So let me just answer a question. I don't know. Here's another unrelated thought, I guess. I really did think a lot about Stormy, Gessler, and Truthmore this time.
I'm very curious about them, I gotta tell you.
Because they got a whole vibe, and I think they're one of these B stories that just, like, is, like, humming along at a full pace, you know? And the only other thought I had about characters is, like, I guess I was a little surprised, and honestly maybe a little let down, about the kind of the backseat Crocus takes in this book, you know? Like, he's foregrounded a bit in the beginning, but, like, he's, him and, Fiddler, Kalim, Apsalar, I don't know. I guess, like, they're our only through line from the last book in a way, and, like, I don't know. I feel like I think about Felicin and Dyker's story a lot more, if that makes any sense, you know?
Me too, 100%.
Yeah. Anywho's, this message is from Bradley. Thanks so much for the read-through podcast. I've been hoping for a way to ease the series for a friend, and you guys have made a lovely low barrier to entry. Love lowering the bar. For the Deadhouse Gates and a book review, I think you didn't focus on a couple key things. And I picked two out. You ready? The glossing over the enormity of crows that had to hold Coltane's soul. It was a lovely elegy, but showcasing how his soul just needed an entire flock, more so than any other Wiccan, including Sormo Eanath, was so powerful. On that note, give Squint his due as having to deal with one of the hardest things in the book. Yes, it is mercy, but I killed Coltane can never be forgotten. And, well, that's the end of his email, but I fully agree with the Squint thing, because when I think about my memory of first reading the section, I was so caught up at the moment. I'm like, oh my God, everyone's dying, blah, 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 blah. And then I'm like, why are we reading about this archer? And then, like, I don't know, it's just such an interesting point of view shift to go to the person who kind of acts in that merciful way.
I mean, I guess, yeah, why not? I wasn't really thinking of it that way, because they kind of just like brushed him off and were like, nah, what you did was great. So I guess I was just like,
well,
yeah, you know.
Well, I don't know if that was. I don't know if that, I don't know if that was the tone necessarily, but.
Yeah, no. I don't know. Was he even a relevant person? I guess we should have thought more about that.
Who, Squint?
I'm not that insightful, Daniel.
Well, that's what I mean. It's like, it's interesting that it's just kind of a shift to this, like in this crucial emotional moment, it's kind of shifts to just, oh, here's the new guy. He's got Gul'Dan in, you know?
I feel like I thought we met Squint at some point. Did we not?
I gotta say, I think that's your first time meeting him. I could be wrong, you know, but I
think... Are you implying that there will be a second time?
He definitely just implied there's gonna be a second. Perhaps third or fourth time.
You seem very familiar with Squint, actually, Peter.
Interesting.
He's actually who the fourth book's about, actually. It's gonna be Squint-heavy book.
Hell yeah.
All about Squint.
Yeah, this book's really just a tease for Squint. Oh, Christ.
He is the Empire.
The dream. So next we have a voicemail from our good buddy Moshe, and here it is.
I love listening to you guys talk about these books. It is a great, great perspective, seeing people or listening to people read them for the first time, listening as their perspectives change and the way they view characters change over time. And finally, and most importantly, fuck Malik Rel.
I love him.
I think we can all agree, Moshe, fuck Malik Rel.
It's a common cant within the community, certainly. But he brings up an interesting point, and I would love to hear, maybe I'll first come to Inge, because I know her feelings about Diker changed throughout the book. And Felicin, like, I feel like there's a lot of characters that maybe feel differently about different points in the book. So Inge, what was that like to kind of, I don't know, have those opinions change, especially for a character like Diker?
You know, Peter, in books, as books do, and life,
I've read them.
Change.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, I mean, I like them. They're great. Honestly, though, not gonna lie, I think that the content for Diker changed from the beginning of being just like war, memories, fight, blood. Then it was like blood, sad, feelings. And then, you know, that's where I got into it. Because I love feelings and I love reading about them. So for me, it was more so, I think that like they got more into like the toll that it was taking on them, where in the beginning they were all like spring and chipper, not really chipper, but like, you know, they're ready to go. But as they got worn down, it became less about the fight and more about the toll. And that's where I really got more invested. Felicin, I knew I'd love right off the bat because she was always in her feels. And then she kind of transcended into a bad bitch, which I can always respect and appreciate.
Gotta respect the game.
It's interesting you say that about trying, like, almost identifying more with the struggle of the Chain of Dogs, because I probably feel similar sometimes when we get the military stuff leaves me a little out in the cold, but I don't know. I always liked Decker, though, so.
I know.
Josh, do you feel like there was characters who your opinion about changed throughout the book?
Yeah, Coltane, because I suggested he slaughter thousands of innocents, and now I realize that he's the greatest man to ever live. And
like the whole point is that he didn't slaughter the
innocents.
Yeah,
just maybe. So I would say that's a pretty big change of opinion for me.
Yeah, it's a 180. You could say that, you know. Mm. But just take that out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Inge, do you want to read our next email?
I would love nothing more than to read it.
I thought this was mine to read.
Ahem.
No, I did the voicemail.
I did the voicemail.
Yeah, you're right.
Oh, God. This is a long one.
Oh, well, wait. Before you read the long email, I did want to shout out, because this email is from Jay, and Mel also wrote in on the subject, and the two of them wrote, I would say, great, more textually based arguments for Shaik, Felicin kind of becoming Shaik Reborn. So,
yeah, I read it, and I don't agree still.
Okay, well, listen, this isn't on Peter, so...
Yeah, they both sent in the same, like, snippet from the book, and reading it out of context, I was like, this makes so much sense. And then I went and found it in the book, and she'd already been doing Shaik shit for, like, a whole ass chapter and a half.
I don't know. There was a whole thread on Reddit once about it. I thought you read it. I don't know what to tell you. Pete's...
Yeah, Reddit on Reddit.
So, that's all to say... I don't know. Roast Josh. I got nothing else.
Yeah,
you know?
your rage feeds me. Roast me.
All right. And take the email away.
Do I have to say anything about Mel?
Why? I just shout out Mel, you know. He also wrote in great explanation about it. So I just wanted to...
Oh, all right. Well, kudos to you, Mel and Jay. But this email comes from Jay. So...
Peter just wanted to fucking waste our time.
I was just trying to get on the record about it.
Forget your email, Mel. We're going to read Jay's.
Oh my God.
This was actually my least favorite book of the series thus far. Respect, Jay. I thought for a while that Midnight Tides was going to beat this one as least favorite, but that book became really good midway through. I don't understand why this is such a fan favorite when it seems that no one in the story accomplished what they had set to do, except maybe Fiddler. But I don't really get what his goal was in the first place, or if he accomplished it. I get that Erickson loves turning over reader expectations, but I think you cross the line when you read a book that accomplishes nothing. Jay, you are my spirit animal.
Jay.
I thrive on what you just said.
Jay, man, sometimes it's the journey, not the destination, my guy.
No, Jay.
Sometimes it's about the journey of 1,000 refugees and then just seeing their hero fucking slaughtered in front of them. And it's that rather than them getting to safety that's important.
And this is the email I mentioned earlier, Josh, when you said about...
I forget.
I am remembering.
Mappo and Ikariam.
Mappo and Ikariam.
Yeah. Okay. I'll say that that's different.
It's of a piece. Most people do not accomplish anything in this book.
Yeah.
You know,
but here's
the refugees get saved.
Well,
but
people do accomplish it. And they go and they do. And people start in very. People end in vastly different places than they start. And I think that's the sign of a journey's completion. Not that they succeeded, but whether they ended up somewhere different. And Mappo and Ikariam ended up fucking nowhere different. At best, you can say that Mappo is a bit more...
Mappo changes
inside.
You can't say Ikariam.
But he also doesn't because he's just gonna keep... I mean, I don't know. Until I see him do something other than enable Ikariam for another, you know, millennia.
I think Mappo's guardian now out of, in theory, friendship and not guilt. I mean, I think that
that's
I would true. Argue that's
oh,
the change.
I hadn't thought
book.
Of it that way. All right. I like that.
Wow. That's huge.
Big if true.
It's still doing the same thing.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Well, you still, yeah. I just think, I don't know. I don't think failure is a strong word, but like, I don't know. I mean, Absalar, Crocus do get where they're trying to go.
Mm-hmm.
Clam, Filler, I don't know.
Well, Jay, I respect your question and answer and feedback.
But
really
listen,
wasn't.
With the failures aside, let me ask this, you know, actually, I don't have a failures aside question, so...
Okay, moving on. I'll read the next one. This next question comes from Twitter, from Andrew. Duwicker is one of my favorite characters so far. I'm basically reading along with you guys. I've started memories, but not much. But yeah. I like Duwicker because he kind of represents a lawful, good, honorable knight type. You get an inside look at the old empire through his lens.
What? Is that so?
I don't know if this I don't know if this dude knows what lawful good is. I don't know if I would call Duwicker lawful good in some ways.
I think he's pretty lawful. What do you mean?
I do. He serves justice ice cold.
Yeah. He's into justice and the law. What the fuck are you talking about, Josh?
I don't know. I just feel like I don't know. Maybe I'm off base there. Yeah, okay, you're right. I do like him. He's a good character.
If justice is punching someone in the throat and killing them,
that,
then
see
he
that's and that was my thought. But then wow. Here's the thing. That was my thought is that he did that. But then I had to remember that he spent the whole book not doing that. And again,
exactly.
Listen. I know I called for refugee deaths, but that one dude, Duwicker could have done this way earlier, and everyone would have been happier for it.
Yeah,
I agree.
I don't know.
I for sure would have been.
I'm not trying to become a Nefpara defender, but definitely that murder is not particularly lawful, you know?
Listen, man, sometimes good isn't lawful.
If someone said that I did something I didn't to sentence me to death, you better believe you're dying too.
You're getting punched in the throat.
Yeah.
Hard.
Minimum punch in the throat.
Shattering your trachea.
I do think, though, that like a Peter punch in the throat is going to resolve in like maybe a stun, a light winding. Maybe, you know what I mean?
Just knock the wind out of him real quick.
Yeah, I'm more almost just shocked. Like, whoa, what are we doing, you know?
Peter? Punching? No.
What was that? What was that breeze that just hit my throat?
Yeah.
That's me.
Should have wore a scarf. This next one comes in from Bob from Gmail. Hi guys, I found when reading Malzahn Book of the Fallen series that my reading comprehension improved immensely the more I read. It seems that India is having the same experience as I. She seems to be gaining a lot more from the books as they go on, enjoying them more. Is that the case? Also, India, next time try not to get pneumonia before podcasting some of my favorite chapters in the series. A little smiley face joke. Oh, India, are you feeling all right?
just still dealing with the residual effects of pneumonia. So, no, I agree. And I also agree that, I mean, this is common sense, and I say it all the time, reading the book is so much better. And in this book particularly, toward the end, as I've been yelled at to read it from the book, which I always had, by the way, I just didn't like reading it. I do feel like you have a better understanding because you can go back and read again, and the accents that the frickin' audiobook guy are not distracting you. But yeah, overall, I agree. I do understand more. I think this book is easier to understand, so it's not really fair for me to say, like, now I'm all about that reading comprehension. But it's definitely a lot more clear, and I think I'm more invested because of it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're almost at the end, so we'll pop into big questions in just a sec, but we got one last tweet. India, do you want to read it for us?
Yes, I would actually love to read it for you. This is a tweet from Duncan. The Chain of Dogs is probably one of the series' highlights for me. We often run into characters that have already built a myth around them, bridge burners for one. To my eye, this one is one of the first times in the series where we see a myth built with Coltane and the Seventh.
I love that point, and I think it's so true. The story is mired in these characters who, like, have decades or centuries of history that we, like, are, like...
I think I brought that up a bunch in the book, in the first book's podcast. I think I remember...
Talking about the bridge burners.
Yeah, talking about the bridge burners and how it was so interesting to, like... Because, you know, in most books, all you get is people having their legends built, right? You see the legends being built. It was so interesting to see them, to meet people. But it was also incredibly jarring because it kind of expected that you know so much already. And it's like, well, I literally can't because you just started the book. And how would I know?
Yeah.
But the Chain of Dogs is sick.
It is. And I think he nails it on the head because, I mean, it's not spoiling anything, but obviously the Chain of Dogs is talked about again in the next 8 books.
Oh,
you know?
For sure.
So it's interesting to see how things can be built upon and contrasting to things that, like, we meet so many things that have been built so much, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Alrighty. So let's go.
Can I just say something really quick, Peter?
Absolutely. Please.
Thank you. I just want to say that all of these questions are so interesting and thought-provoking, and I never even thought of half of them, which is really cool to hear everybody's point of view. So I appreciate you guys, and thank you for giving me new thoughts, because I never had them before, and I would have never thought of them, and they're actually really interesting.
Yeah, if we're handing out kudos, little kudos corner time. I agree. Love getting mail. Love talking to people about the books, and, like, obviously, I want to talk about them. Yeah, we got a podcast about it, you know?
It's like, freaking podcast about it. Love it.
So, come on in. The water's fine. But let's go. Big picture, you know, we respond a lot of emails, but this time I kind of wanted to build up to maybe your total thoughts on Dead House Gates. So, India, why don't you go first?
My total thoughts on Dead House Gates. Okay. This is a tough question. I wish I would have had an answer prepared. All right. So this whole book has, as always, been an emotional roller coaster for End. I really loved that everybody was not together. I loved that everybody was doing different things and you got a taste of everything. I thought the book did that really, really well. Keeping you in the loop with everybody's different points of views and coming back to them at just the right time when you were getting sick of, Diker and Coltane. So, or maybe you weren't, but I was. I really liked that. I love Felicin's journey. I have no idea how she became Chaik. I still don't get it, but
there's those emails if you want to read them.
Yeah, but. I'm going to actually refer to those emails and get them. You guys can drop some wisdom on me because your girl End is just not down for it. But I think it's set up a lot more. I think even way, obviously, more so than the first book because we went somewhere completely different and did completely different things. I think this, I'm not sure where we're going next. But I think that this book specifically put us in a position to see and learn a lot more history and really set us up to be a little bit more excited about what's to come with this battle. And yeah, so I give this book a solid B minus.
All right, Josh, go for it.
I think I agree with India. I like that. I really like how disparate the storylines were in this one. And I actually really enjoyed that, unlike Gardens of the Moon, where like all of these storylines twist into like this one pivotal thing, I was really worried that something like that would happen in this book and that would become like a running thing in the series. I'm glad that he like that, you know, they were not together and they stayed not together. I like that.
I agree.
I also want to say something I really enjoyed about this book that I hated about the first book. And I probably on a reread of the first book will truly enjoy it. But I loved all the weird shit that happened in this book that clearly is like teases of what's to come, you know, like,
yes.
Stormy Gessler Truth being bronze, definitely going to be important. The Solanda and all that shit, going to be important. The undead dragon, going to be important. Like, I like all these little hints of what's to come, and it's got me pretty excited for the rest of this.
Mm. You said just, because I'll go in a sec, but you both mentioned the disparate storylines thing, and I'm curious about what's compelling in that for you.
Constant change of scenery.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I think I've always enjoyed books that were told from different points of views. Like, that's like my favorite type of book. I just think it breaks up the story more, and like it makes it more interesting to leave something and then come back. And I don't know, it's just something refreshing about reading multiple points of views of different situations, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I agree, and I think, I mean, the series continues that way, and I do think sometimes in the series maybe there's too many points of views. But I think this book, it nails it, and I think I fully agree. I think it works great. I had an interesting Twitter exchange with someone about how I felt about Deadhouse Gates on reread, and I recorded a different podcast about it. But it's a bit like, I feel like my opinion about Gardens of the Moon changed, like had a greater delta and difference between the rereading. Do you mean? Because I like thought Deadhouse Gates was great. I read it, still thought it was great. Mm-hmm. But I think other books in the series, when I reread them, had a bigger shift, you know? So I think I appreciated different parts of this book more. But I mean, overall, I still think this book's a banger. And like, what's up? Check it out. I got nothing else to say about it, you know? I mean, yeah.
I love that take.
So that is a wrap on Deadhouse Gates. And the next time the three of us will be together, we'll do Memories of Ice. But next week, I recorded spoilers for the whole series conversation about this book. And last time, we were kind of finding our footing. Me and AJ had the conversation. But this time, I invited Tommy on the show, whose son, I forget his Reddit name. Anyway, he made the great companion guides for Gardens of the Moon, Deadhouse Gates, and Memories of Ice. You may know them. If not, we can link to them. There'll be links out there. Anywho's, we had a great conversation about the whole series and Deadhouse Gate specifically. And then after that, we have two kind of special episodes coming out. We're excited to release them, hear what you think about them. The first one, we recorded a conversation. Me and AJ and a friend read Willful Child by Steven Erikson. It's kind of satirical science fiction novel. Interesting stuff. Anyway, stay in the loop about that, but Memories of Ice will be out soon. All these episodes are going to come out week by week because we're trying to get into Memories of Ice, you know. But anyway, tweet at us. We want to hear about, I don't know, we love getting mail, obviously. Either you got anything else to say before we jump the ship back to Genabacus, Memories of Ice time.
I'm ready to get Genabacus to there.
You really, you tried. I get the joke you were trying to do, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I respect it.
Thank you.
I do definitely respect that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Trying to get it back there. Did you like my, you didn't like my take.
Well, there was a decided silence.
Okay.
So.
Lena with a thud, that joke.
on that note.
No. We can't go yet. I just remembered. You guys got to make predictions for the next book.
Oh, fuck.
Ah, damn it.
I think we're going to check in on the Bridge Burners, baby.
Well, all right, now you got to get better than that, Inge.
I think that, I don't know.
This is so hard because you like to ask us for predictions.
Oh, I got one.
About books that probably have nothing to do with the last one.
I got one. I think it's a safe one. I think Baruch is going to be a heavy player in the next one. I think a heavier player on the side of the good guys, quotation marks.
I thought Baruch died.
No. Because
Mehmet died.
Yeah, Mehmet died. Baruch didn't die because Mehmet. Baruch's the one who sent the Baccarals to get, they thought, Coltane's soul, but they got Duergar's soul. So just based on the fact that he sent things for that, I think Brook's gonna be a pretty big player. So, and I don't know shit about him, so I'm excited.
What do you think, Ange? Gonna Bacchus Alliance whole thing?
Whatever happened to the eel person?
That's
Kruppa.
Let's say something that's gonna happen with him, huh?
You think Krupp's back?
I would hope so. He was a funny little character.
Well, I guess we'll see, won't we?
I don't honestly. Maybe, who knows? But I also want to give like a really quick shout out to my boy Scott. He defended me on the Twitter, and I appreciate him hardcore.
Just shouting
Thank
out.
Thank you for feeling bad for me being sick and also not understanding the books.
And I guess we're wrapping it up with a Scott shout out.
Yep.
Episode.
I'd like to dedicate this episode to Scott.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Whoever you are.
Yeah.
Maybe the boys aren't down for it, Scott, but I am.
No. Okay.
It's not how they wanted to go out, Scott.
I was just surprised. I didn't know this was the space we were veering. No, we're good. We're good.
Mm-hmm.
I just figured if there was any time to do it, it'd be closing it out. So he really knew. Yeah. Impact. It was
Makes
impactful.
Makes sense.
It should be a little parentheses before the period.
Exactly.
All right. Well, yes. We're
alrighty. So we'll talk to our Memories of Ice. We're looking forward to it.
Can't wait.
All right. Bye.
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 Hello everyone, producer AJ here. Peter already gave you the rundown on what's going on in the space between Deadhouse Gates and Memories of Ice, so let me take this time to say thank you all so, so much for listening and supporting this show over the last year. We've watched the show grow from nothing to over 1,000 listeners per episode. Thank you, seriously, from the bottom of our hearts. Also, thank you, as always, to Dan Geserich for making our spectacular logo. You can follow him on Twitter at Dan Geserich for the hottest, gritty, did nothing wrong takes. And of course, the music in today's episode is by the one and only Amaranthin from their album The New Romantic, which you can find along with their other music and brand new EP on bandcamp.com. Links to their pages will be in the show notes, and 10 Very Big Books will be back next week on January 31st with a special Deadhouse Gates spoiler episode. See you then, and thank you so much for listening.
So this next question comes from Twitter. It's from Andrew.
I think actually this is, shouldn't I do it?
So this next email, Twitter.
No.
This next question comes from Twitter from Andrew.
This next question comes in from Twitter. It's from Andrew.
Hey, we'll do one more. Okay, Duiker. Duiker.
Duiker is one of my favorite characters so far. All right, what are we doing?
Duiker is one of my favorite characters so far. I'm basically reading along with you guys.
Do one clean cut. We can't do this.
I'm trying to, and you keep screaming at me.
Just start over from Twitter.